the expression from the music inspired me so much to take risks, and it inspired damn near the whole rap game.
Hello again, I'm Adam Ons. You may know me as the host of The Opus, and now I'm bringing my own show, The Spark Parade, to the Consequence Podcast Network. I speak with artists and creatives about the cultural artifacts that spark their personal interest and creativity, whether it's music, books, movies, video games, or any other kind of art.
I've never spoke about it in this amount of detail. I'm suddenly going, oh my God, I'm blowing my own mind here, Christ. It's actually a giant part of my life.
By talking about the things we love, we share and discover insights into our personality and the things that drive us.
It's just magic, really. I mean, frustrating. And it makes some people angry, but I don't think anyone's ever done anything like it.
I speak with people like Connor Roberts, Phoenix's Thomas Mars, Chris Gethard, Helen Hong, Adrian Young, and more, so their sparks of inspiration can start a fire in you.
I'm grateful for those who continue to put our history and who we are as a people in the forefront and make you see it.
Find the Spark Parade wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey pod people, Engineer Adam here, jumping in for a quick second to let you know about the brand new all-in-one platform for all of you creative podcasters out there. Anchor makes it easier than ever to make a podcast. It's free to use and has all the creation tools you need to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Plus, Anchor will get your podcast set up on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are found. Even better, Anchor helps you connect with sponsors, even if you're just starting out. It's the perfect choice for podcasters, so make sure to check it out. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's anchor.fm. Back to the show.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Pod people, Leo Phillips here with This Must Be The Gig, your backstage pass to the world of live music. Every single week we bring you fascinating conversations from the beating heart of the performance scene with some of, I think, the most exciting names on this gigantic, big, spongy globe. We talk to them about passion, first concerts, last concerts, and everything in the juicy center. This week, I'm delighted to be joined by roots rocker Pete Yawn to discuss seeing Diana Ross as a child, performing Replacements covers in the school talent show, and, of course, his daughter's love of Smash Mouth. But before we dig into all of that, let's check in with our constant companion here at TMBTG's Lily Owls. Hello, Engineer Adam!
Hello!
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. We've had a little bit of a break. We've had some field roast turkeyless turkey.
Turkeyless turkey for Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. We are thankful that you're listening to this episode.
Why so are you pronouncing
thank you, everyone.
Like that?
I don't know. It sounds fun.
Oh, but is it fun to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Try it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Kind of feels a little bit...
I wanted to introduce our brand new extra feature for the intro. Are you
what?
Ready?
Yes.
It is the as yet unnamed quiz portion of the show.
Shit, is that all we could do?
Well, if somebody else can do better, they can write in to thismustbethegig@gmail.com and let us know. This must be the gig. And let us know,
sure,
and
that
we could start using their title for this segment. But for now, it is the unnamed quiz segment of the week.
No, we could call it something. Quiz Biz.
Quiz Biz. It's the Quiz Biz.
Or the Quiznots.
It's Quiznos sandwiches.
What's Quiznos?
That was a chain that used to exist in America.
I just heard of it through the movies.
Yeah, exactly.
What about Quiz Ms. Rabble Robbles? The Les Quiz...
Yes, it is from now on known as
Le
Quiz Marab.
Les Quiz Marables. Wait, hold on. Les, what is it really called?
Les Miserables.
Les Miserables.
Le Quiz Marables.
Les Marables. There you go.
We got
just
it.
Joe Pesci that.
Okay, so.
Who's watching Home Alone? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, we're all watching Home Alone.
Okay.
It's everyone.
I'm just going to drop it there. What?
This week. Les Quiserables.
Why are you not pronouncing S? You're not French.
Les Quiserables.
Only du fromage. This Les Quiserables.
Yes, this week's Les Quiserables.
Oh my god, I cackled. Shit, I'm sorry. Sorry, listeners.
It's called
listeners.
It is called Aquabat or Avenger.
Oh.
Are you ready for this?
I don't know. Please explain to the darling listeners out there that I have no idea about this.
This is all coming
show
from
segment.
The brain of Engineer Adam, and ain't it twisted?
Cootie patootie.
So, this week's quiz, I'm going to test you on your knowledge here of both comic books and music, which, you know, is a sweet spot for you.
Okay.
So,
but I also like being prepared. So this is now like what happens
baby?
When a stand-up comic is going to point me out in the crowd.
Pop quiz, baby.
Shitting. Okay, let's go.
So you've got to know the band The Aquabats, who are a ska punk group who dress like superheroes and fight monsters during the middle of their shows. Mm-hmm. And you've got to know The Avengers, the comic book group.
I got you, baby.
You know, Iron Man, Captain America.
But there are
There's some other members of the Avengers that you might not know. So I'm going to name a person.
Okay.
You've got to tell me if it's a member of the band The Aquabats or if it's one of the lesser known Avengers.
Great. I'm in. Yes.
Okay.
Wait, what's the Space Jam song?
Y'all ready for this?
Y'all ready for this? Is that from Space Jam?
Yeah, it's from something. So the first Les Quizarables answer.
Les Quizarables.
Is Catboy.
Okay.
Is that a member of the Aquabats or is that an Avenger?
Aquabats.
You're right.
Yes. What do I win?
Well, you got to get most. You got to get.
Oh.
We're going to go for six of them,
oh,
and you've got to get the best.
I don't think we have time. No, literally, I don't think we have time.
The Two Gun Kid.
Avenger.
Yeah, you're right.
Shit. I sense a pattern. I sense a pattern.
Prince Adam.
Oh. This one's... Okay, so my thinking is, in Avengers,
mm-hmm.
there aren't many princes and princesses. They are gods.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to say Aquabats.
You're right.
Shit.
All three right.
Burr, burr, burr. I'm not going to do that.
All three right.
I need a new vuvuzela.
Congrats. I'm
proud
of you.
No, let's do more.
You want to do more?
I'm feeling lucky.
Now you got all three right.
I feel lucky.
Well, there is one more prince on this list.
Woof.
The Prince of Karate.
The Prince of Karate?
Mm-hmm.
Karate. I would say Aquabats.
You're right again.
Shit.
All right, two
Wait,
more.
Wait, my theory on the prince. I don't know if you're all, I don't know, Taskmaster. Did you do your research?
I don't know if there are any
on
princes in the Avengers.
Not on the game. On your opponent, me. I'm your opponent.
There are two more answers
yes?
here. Iron Lad.
Okay. I know there's an Iron Man.
Mm-hmm. Is there an Iron Lad?
I'm not such a fan of. That might shock and appall the masses.
But is there an Iron Lad?
I would say, what are my options?
Avenger or Aquabat?
I say it's an Avenger.
You're right.
Oh, look at me go.
All right, the last one is Dr. Druid.
Oh, this is an Avenger.
You're right.
Am I?
Yep.
Did I get them all right?
You got all six right.
You know why?
Why?
Because we are comfy in the studio. There's
yes.
no pressure. There's nobody
you
looking.
You got all
nobody
them right.
whispering. There's
this is how you should have
hand.
Taken all your tests.
No, this is how I should live life.
Yeah.
I should just stay here
just
in the
studio.
Stewed. Why do you call it a stewed?
That's short for studio.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are you, Australian now, bookies? You're going to put your cozy on and take out your brolly later when it's raining. Okay. Great addition.
Thank you. That's going to be...
I'm only saying that because I won.
Yes, of course. But every week we're going to try to do another little fun quiz like that. I'm actually looking into the technology of how we could get like a listener call in for that maybe for future. So stay tuned. You might get your chance to contribute. So listen in.
I am excited. No, I am not afraid of you.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that. I don't want you to be afraid of me.
No. Well, sometimes when you put competition in front of me, I crumble and giggle and maybe throw the thing away. I throw away my future.
Let's also return to our favorite other favorite segment.
Favorite other favorite.
Our favorite other favorite segment of the week here at the show. It is the
live show of the week. I'm exhausted.
You're exhausted from winning so hard.
Yeah.
Each week we highlight one of the most heart-thumping events that we could find out in the world, and we bring it to you, our pod people, to go out there and go to the show.
So this week's live show of the week, we are highlighting a performance from Lucy Dacus and Haley Hendricks at the 930 Club in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, December 7th.
As you might have heard in previous episodes, we love Lucy Dacus here at the show. She put out Historian and worked on the Boy Genius record in 2018, which makes for quite an impressive year.
Hell of a year.
And then also, her 2019 EP was the sign that we've got even more greatness from Lucy coming up in the near future. So if you want to get in on that show or the excitement of any other show, you can head over to StubHub via cosradio.lv/StubHub. That's cosradio.lv/StubHub to find the best selection of tickets to all of the hottest shows. One more time, cosradio.lv/StubHub.
StubHub.
And while we're talking about important things that you need to do while you're on the internet, go over to Stitcher, Apple Podcast, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Subscribe, rate, and review to this show. Make it 5 stars. I demand it. Go do it now.
Throw us all your stars, please.
The promise we made in previous episodes was if you leave us a 5-star review on one of those aforementioned podcast purveyors, send us an email at thismustbethegig@gmail.com telling us which one was you, and also let us know what your favorite snack was, and we will send you a personalized recommendation for a new favorite album.
Yeah. I mean, it's not confusing to us because we've already had people emailing us. So it shouldn't be confusing, but it does kind of sound a little bit
whiteboard. Or just like tweet at me and say like, hey, I left you a review. What's up, man? And I'll be like, here's your new favorite album for the future.
Let's focus on this week's interview. As I mentioned earlier, we are joined by Pete Yorn, who dials in from the Acast Studios in New York City. Pete is the legendary voice behind alternative smash hits like Life on a Chain and my personal favorite, Strange Condition, and most recently released a record with Jackson Phillips of Daywave called Caretakers. In addition to his touring life as a new father, Pete and I discuss his experiences at the legendary Los Angeles venue Largo, and we also chat about working with Scarlett Johansson and an unfortunate incident involving smoked pumpkin seeds. This is me and Pete. Enjoy! So how was the Philadelphia show last night?
It was great. Great crowd and fun. I got this new band playing with me, so it's only our third show together, so it's still fun and fresh, you know? Yeah, we had a good time, and lots of sing-alongs, and it was nice to see. I saw some like old school fans who've been following me since like year 2000, 2001, and they're still still coming out. It was just so cool to see all them, a lot of them based in Philly, so it was nice.
Yeah, that's always wonderful, especially with the new band as well. Did you have any sort of tips and tricks that you had to work through before you guys started playing together?
This tour is definitely kind of, celebrate the new record. And the cool thing is the band is, I made the record with this guy, Jackson Phillips, and he has a band called Daywave. And he co-produced and co-wrote a lot of the songs on the record and played a lot of the parts on the record. And I think one day when I was thinking about going out on tour, he's like, hey, me and my band will back you up if you need a band. Cause I'd been playing acoustic for a few years and I haven't been taking a band out. And I was like, that could be fun. So we started playing a little bit and, so he grabbed his two of his buddies that were in his band and we kind of learned all this stuff and a bunch of my old songs and it's been really fun playing with them. So
Jackson also produced the record as well.
That's right. Yeah.
So what is that relationship like? Does it feel completely fresh or do you feel like it's just something that, you know, is really natural and organic?
It's definitely natural, organic, and fresh. It's all three things. I feel like it'd be something you would like to see on a sign in the grocery store in the produce section, and you would pick that fruit or vegetable. When we met, it was really like we just kind of had a quick rapport with each other and in the studio as well. We just kind of hit it off, and he brings he brings a really cool aesthetic to the live show with his guitar playing and his synth playing, and he sings background vocals on the record in a lot of spots, so it's cool to have him be able to sing those live too.
And when you're working with new people and kind of teaching them your old material, do you feel like you learn it in a new light or hear it in a new light when you are playing it back for them?
Absolutely. I remember when the first songs we learned were songs from the new record, and those kind of came pretty naturally. And then it was like, all right, well, if we're going to tour, we got to learn some of the back catalog songs, you know? And I let them pick. I was like, well, why don't you guys pick what songs you might want to play or that you think would be fun to play? And so we started from there, and they came back with a few deep cuts.
What kind of deep cuts?
Kind of like one song called Sleep Better, which is on Music for the Morning After from 2001. And, like we hadn't really played, I hadn't played that live with a band since probably 2001, you know, maybe 2002.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, we'll try. But they bring overall, like they bring kind of a slightly different vibe to the older songs, but it feels fun. Like it's a cool thing that they're bringing to it. And it feels like it's like, you know, respectful to the songs and the recordings, but like kind of a new freshness to it that just has like a nice energy. And I think that everybody's feeling that, so it's cool to see, because you never know, you know, if it's gonna work
or
not.
Of course. Well, you also never know what kind of songs are gonna kind of gel with that band. You kind of, when you meet somebody new, you can kind of tell what they like, but when you're showcasing your own music and being that kind of front man with this new band, I suppose it's like you also have to show off the best of it. But I love that they've gone for these deep cuts that you even had to rediscover. I think that works with the new material as well. I mean, like talking about Sleep Better, like that goes so well with the new record.
Yeah, and I think you make a great point that, like, I think as we play together and learn the strengths of everybody, then it becomes a little slightly more obvious, like, oh, you know what song might be good to try, you know, or like, I'm not going to touch this song because it might be too, just not really in our wheelhouse. But like, we kind of figuring out what our wheelhouse is, and then we kind of pulling songs in from that space. And so, yeah.
You've put out two live albums so far. And obviously live albums can be quite tricky. Did you have that affinity toward live albums as a kid? Like, did you have a specific vision for it based on something you had listened to or experienced before?
I remember when we recorded the Live from New Jersey, they had this truck with a full studio on the back of it, like a box truck. And they pulled up outside and they connected all these wires and everything. And they recorded the show multi-track. And I remember thinking that was so cool. And I remember after the show, I climbed into the back of the truck and they were playing it back for me. And I was like, this is amazing. It's like they had like a full, like, you know, 72 track console in the back of this box truck. And, you know, live stuff, you know, there's certain bands that are great live. And I remember being inspired growing up by seeing some bands that were just so powerful live. And, you know, sometimes they're just bands that sound good no matter what, you know, they're like, they don't need it. They don't need anything. They're just like, it's that magical thing of this group of players together, and they just sound amazing always. And, you know, I always, you know, aspire to be on that level, but it's hard, you know, and it's tricky, and one member, you know, personnel change can make a big difference, you know? So, you know, I'm sensitive to that. And I'm not one who's like, oh, just whip up anyone to play these songs and just grab anyone. Like, it's, you know, it's definitely, there's a lot of thought put into it and care. So
last year I visited the Calgary like music museum or something. I can't remember what it's exactly called. I don't know if you've heard of it or been there
in Canada.
It's like, it's this massive structure, and it's got the oldest instruments, and it has the original Rolling Stones track that they recorded on as well on the road.
Oh, wow.
So exactly kind of what you're talking about. That's so, I love that happened with that happened, and you got to actually dive inside and listen to it, because plugging something in, it's like this kind of forgotten art of capturing live music as it's happening, as opposed to, you know, I suppose that's analog versus digital, that whole concept, but I think that there's something really special about capturing it right there and not really needing to go into this full spec studio.
Yeah, you know, there's a few ways to do it. Like, some people will do it if they really want to, you know, go for it and they're putting together something kind of really high end. They'll do it multi-track. And, you know, now we record all our shows through our console every night. We have this digital console that we could record with. And so my sound guy, Jonathan's been recording the shows, and he also puts up a couple ambient mics around the room. So it's like a board tape, and then you mix it with the room. And I haven't heard any of it yet, but I'm excited to check it out after the tour and see what sounds good.
Do you have a plan of what you're going to do with it?
I don't have a plan. You know, the latest live show that we recorded was actually one of my acoustic shows. I've been doing all this acoustic touring for like 4 years, and we just did Live at the Troubadour and in West Hollywood, and we recorded that, and it came out really well. And I just we filmed it too, and we're kind of putting it together. We're figuring out what we want to do with it, but I did put out a song like on. Now there's so many ways to just get song like live stuff out quick. Like I put something on Instagram, my Instagram TV channel. I put Crystal Village up there, and so
wow,
it's, you
okay.
know, it's there's stuff out there, and I'll probably put more out.
I think it's also because it's so nice to be able to get to where your fans are now. It's like you go to the platform and give them what they want, but it also makes fans seem incredibly needy. And like, we just get everything we want now, don't we? I mean, you're a music fan too, right? So do you feel like that shift is happening, that you feel kind of grateful that music, you could just get music in any way? Or do you feel a little bit like, I don't know, like a Neil Young, where he's like, I can't handle this. Yeah. It's too much.
I think I'm somewhere in between where
there's a little
fatigue where you just, you know, like when you just have so much choice, it's hard to make a choice, you know?
Right.
And it's nice when you want to put something up. But then there's also that thing, like, still at the end of the day, you know, people have to know it's there, you know? Even though you can instantly put something out, you know, you hope that people are paying attention or that they know it's there to go check it out. But the cool thing today is that people can share stuff so easily, you know? So, you know, it's just a different, totally different world than when I first started with the way people kind of consume music and content and all that. But that's a whole nother conversation.
It is. But I think it's fascinating, especially because there is that whole idea of when you started out, you didn't start out last year. You know, you have been around for a very long time. And I feel like the way that you have the trajectory of your career has gone has been that you've experienced kind of these different iterations. As you said, you've just been touring acoustically for 4 years, and now you're back with a band with a new record. You know, another collaborator that I'd love to talk more about in a bit is Peter Buck of REM. And there's just like so many people that you've worked with that you almost have to shift and change your own style, but also stay true to yourself as well. So with all these shifts and change within the landscape of music, you also have to make sure that you are still servicing the core of who you are as a musician.
Yeah, and that's, you know, for me, it's pretty natural to do that. I have like a pretty rigid center where you know, if I'm just like, no, you know, if something feels wrong or not natural to me, you know, and I'll have the conversation with myself. Like, well, are you just being a curmudgeon? Are you stuck in your comfort zone? You know, like I look at it from all angles, and you know, I definitely like to do things that feel different and not the way they've been done. Ultimately, for me, I just want, you know, if I have music that I'm excited about, I just want people to discover it and hopefully come see me at shows and crank it on a Saturday night or on a Tuesday morning, whatever, and share it with their family and friends and get something out of it, you know, and all the other stuff that goes with it, you know. I just hope that, you know, it somehow creates a situation where I can continue to make the music and be able to, you know, live my life and, you know, not be homeless. You know,
just continue to do the work, right?
But everything seems to luckily take care of itself, and I just focus on you know, the music and my love for that. And
you mentioned a little bit earlier about obviously being sensitive to who you're working with and what's happening around you. So tell me a little bit about the process of you in the studio this time around for this album. Just listening to it, what were you a little bit more affected by this time around?
This was a record that, this was a journey into sound. What is that from? That's the song.
This is a journey into sound. It sounds like a bit it was beginning a of a
It was a journey into sound, and a sound odyssey. A few things happened.
Yeah.
Very important things happened. I was sitting with my brother, my middle brother, who's older than me, and he said, we were at a restaurant, and this is probably January of 2018. And he said, Petey, when are we going to get some new music from you? I know some new music. And he's like my biggest fan. He's like, he used to be the drummer in my band. And I said, I looked at him, I said, man, I don't know. We had a baby a couple of years before, and I was so focused on her and enjoying it so much. I just kind of like, I think all my creative juice was going to being creative as a dad or something like that. I wasn't really writing much, and I didn't really care. I was just kind of like, I'm good. I'm not in a rush. I have so many records out. It's like I didn't feel the need to put anything else into the world at that moment. And that's by no means didn't mean I wasn't going to, you know, dip back into it. I just wasn't really thinking about it. And so I said to him, like, I don't know, I'm not really feeling it. 3 days later, I get an email reconnecting me with this kid, Jackson Phillips, who is Daywave, who I had met maybe like 3 months earlier at a birthday party late at night. We were both kind of like, you know, had a few drinks at that point. And we met and we talked. And I remember we hit it off. We were like, what's up, man? And it was a really cool conversation that we had. And I had known his music and liked it. Then I remember he said, like, oh, I got a studio out in Silver Lake. You should come by. And I was like, we were like, yeah, yeah. And I totally wanted to. But then, like, next day, like, woke up, completely forgot about it. I don't know if something was put in the air, whatever, after I told my brother I wasn't really thinking about anything. But all of a sudden, there's Jackson Phillips connected with me on an email. And I was like, oh, yeah, I should go out and see him. So I went and saw him. And we talked for a few minutes and decided we were going to record some songs for fun, maybe make an EP. Like 5 songs. And I think I went back, I left his house after just a short meeting that day. And then I went back a few days later and we just hit it. We just started making music together and it was so natural. And just kind of, you know, I would take a step, he would take a step, I would take a step, he would take a step. And we just kind of just have fun playing and creating soundscapes. It's weird with me. It's always when I say like, I'm not doing something, like literally 3 days later, all of a sudden, boom. So what happened, so where it led to was like the most kind of like kind of creative spurt I had in years. And we ended up recording 20 songs. I basically go there like once a week. Maybe we took like a month where I was traveling or he was traveling too. But like I would go there once a week and we'd start in the morning at like 11 a.m. And by 5-6 o'clock, we'd have a full song done. And at first it was songs that I had written that I was kind of sitting on, you know, this as a jumping off point. And then after like 4 songs, we're like, why don't I just start writing tunes together? And we start writing songs together where I would still write, you know, the lyrics, but we would write the music and the arrangement together. And it was just fun. And we would joke, we'd be like, you know, every day I'd come home, he'd send me an MP3 as I was getting in my car, and I would kind of crank it up on my drive home back to the Santa Monica. And I'd be like, it sounds pretty good. I like this. And you know, and then it was the songs, sometimes they burn out quick, or sometimes I would leave the studio in other sessions, not with him, you know, over years where I was excited about something too. And then it wouldn't stay with me. I'd be like, I don't like it. But these songs really stayed. And we would joke like, well, how long you want to keep going with this? And we would just be like, well, until we make something that we're just kind of not into or something. So we're still kind of just have this open kind of.
That never happened. Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of right. Open kind of invitation to just record music together. And he was super welcoming me into his house and generous with his time and just a great guy. And having him out on the road now is just a bonus. He's just like a really good person. I like spending time with him. So when I met him that night at the birthday party in Malibu, California, he said that, when he was little, he's a bit younger than me. And when he was little, his older sister used to play my first record in the car all the time. And so he kind of grew up, you know, listening to that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we got in the studio together, he kind of, I don't know, maybe he just saw me a certain different way than I had seen myself in a while. And he kind of reminded me about some things that I was into that I had maybe moved on from or forgot about. And so it was interesting. He gave me kind of a fresh perspective on myself. And I think that's, you can hear that in the record as well. So
you can. Yeah. But you also want that relationship with a working partner where you are not only inspired to do something new, but you're also inspired to have different perspectives, because I don't know why you do this. I can't, you know, I can't put words in your mouth, but I'm assuming part of it is to also rediscover things about yourself that you didn't know. And obviously seeing a fan and then somebody that you respect, having that relationship, I can imagine was really eye-opening for you.
Yeah, I think so. More than anything, it was just, we just had this flow. It was just like, and sometimes you could have a flow and nothing really, you know, you could get something out of it, but it doesn't keep your interest. But for whatever reason, it kept interest. I didn't, he comes up with some beautiful parts. I mean, he's a great keyboard player, great guitar player, and he just had a good instinct on everything. And I think we just kind of worked well with each other. So,
and also having this space, I suppose, when you don't have an expectation and all this idea like, right, I'm going to come out with this record this year, I'm going to get in and record it. When you initially didn't have that idea that you were going to do all of that, does that allow you to have that moment of pause and have that break almost where you can creatively just like re-up your, you know, get the steam back?
You know, I've made so many records over the years and different projects and stuff like that. But I do feel like I always, even when I'm making a record for a major label or there's an expectation, I feel like I was always trying to create the illusion that I was just making music with my friend or something like that. It wasn't like, and I never loved like big fancy recording studios. I'd always opt for home setups, you know, little home studios. And I liked that sort of kind of laid back approach to it. At the same time, I like to record fast. I don't like belaboring over things. And I kind of like to, we get it and we keep moving. And if it's not somewhere that's great, then, you know, because you're in a home studio, it's not a bit, we'll just tear the whole thing down and start again, like a whole nother version of it or something like that.
So you're not precious about the work?
No, I'm not precious about it. I'm precious about the final product, but I'm not precious about the process at all. I'm not meticulous.
Wow.
I'd rather get
that's amazing. You're like a unicorn.
I'd rather I'd rather get a vibe. I want something,
right?
It's so hard to get something recorded that over repeated listens, you know, still seems interesting to me. So that's what I'd rather have, and it might be something that sounds crappier than something that's recorded really hi-fi, you know. It's just about capturing a feeling is the most important thing.
Do you feel like that is why you feel so comfy touring and on stage and performing live, because you're not kind of slaving over this idea of what it's meant to sound like, and you can just be as imaginative and improvise as much as possible? Do you feel like that lends itself to you playing live in your performance?
Well, I don't know about anybody trick, but let me be very clear. There's nothing comfortable or comfy about me having to play live ever or touring. But
tell me more.
But I do it.
Why?
I do it because, yes. I do it because on the other side of what you said, I do love the idea of creating a living version of the song every night. And that makes me feel more alive. It makes the music feel alive. And I like that opportunity for sure to do that. You know, my acoustic tours, the one rule is there's no set list. And so I'd have to make the show up on the spot every night. And, you know, I'd take requests and just kind of feel what I'm feeling. But that kind of spontaneity, which at first terrified me, ended up becoming something that, you know, I kind of crave in the show. And I could already tell, you know, with the band shows, it's much more of a tailored thing. You know, it's like we have a set list and we know kind of what songs and what order we're going to play. There's like an acoustic moment in the middle of the show where I just do a few songs myself and I take requests there, and they could be different every night. But as far as the set with the band, we kind of have like a set show, and it's a much more organized thing. And that's cool as well. But I'm curious to see how long that'll keep my interest, because I'm so used to just the kind of total free for all of the acoustic shows where I can go anywhere I want. I'll probably have to mix up the set list soon, but we've done three shows and they've been fun so far, but I can tell after a few more, I'll probably have to mix it up.
Pause the podcast.
Pause the podcast.
Are you looking at a calendar full of great events but struggling to find tickets? StubHub's gotcha. Whatever your favorite band, team, or venue, StubHub is here to save the day with the best tickets for any budget.
Whether you're looking for a seat at a Broadway show, tickets to the summer's big arena tour, or a night of cheering on your hometown team, StubHub has the seats you're looking for at the price you want to pay.
Head to cosradio.lv/StubHub or their user-friendly app to find tickets that are 100% guaranteed by FanProtect. StubHub's never sold out, with the most shows, the most tickets, and the most fans.
So, head on over to cosradio.lv/StubHub or the StubHub app. The best tickets to the best experiences in music, sports, and theater.
That's cosradio.lv/StubHub.
Just clarify for me, so you mentioned that you're not so comfy on stage, but yet I feel like doing an acoustic show when you have like an artist and fan interaction, that feels incredibly uncomfy in my brain, but I'm also not a performer. Why does that make you feel kind of comfy? And how have you managed to kind of get over the fact that you just got to do it? You just have to push through.
I've just built endurance over the years and mental toughness, I think, is a lot of it.
Yeah.
I will say it's hard. Maybe let me be more clear. I have to remind myself a lot during the day when I'm away and I'm traveling that the best part of the day is going to be the show, especially if I feel well, you know, if I'm not like sick or so. It's like horrible to be sick on the road and have to perform, or you're worrying about letting anybody down. That sucks. But when I feel good and everything, you know, the best part of the day is the show for sure. And after the show, you feel like, you know, like you're on top of the world. You feel like you accomplished something. And that's amazing. But I think the hardest thing about touring is just kind of the in-between of like the day and going, waiting for the show and going, being out of your space. And that was something that I've had to learn to deal with. I think when I was younger, I would just kind of, you know, drink a lot, smoke a lot, and just kind of like party through it. I was a young kid out in the town, but now, you know, it's a different experience for sure, and I've had to find new things to keep me interested on the road than they would back in the day. And you know, now I luckily travel with a bunch of great people, whether it's the acoustic tours or now with this new band. All great guys, they're cool people to interact with, but yeah, it's kind of like just kind of stay headstrong and be ready for each show. And then when you do the show, then you could really kind of get into it.
But I know what you mean about it's the spaces in between where you're kind of waiting, because the thrill of obviously going on stage versus being quiet in your room, it's this juxtaposition that's kind of jarring.
Yeah. Sometimes you find like I've been like you're backstage in this quiet room or like a big festival, yeah, or something in a trailer, and all of a sudden you're going to be out in front of like 80,000 people, and like like sometimes like if you're not feeling good in your head, it like could like make you dizzy, you know. But like,
yeah,
then you go and you get out there and it's like, what? But yeah, I've learned some good tricks over the years to kind of like just get pumped up for it. So
can you share some of them or one of them?
One of them is, you know, someone said this was great. And this was more recently. This was maybe about, mm-hmm, in the springtime. I went to a radio station in Kansas City, Missouri, and I had to play Calm Down for the first time on the radio, acoustic. And I hadn't done that in a while, and I was playing it, and I got through it, and it was fine. But I felt afterwards, when I was done, I told the DJ, I was like, wow, I was like, it's weird, even though, you know, like it's not a big deal, like when you go live on the air, all of a sudden like something in me starts like giving me anxiety, like you feel it, like you get like my legs get like weak or whatever, and you know, you play it. And she said, she's like, oh, I'm DJing here all the time, and I just pretend I'm like talking to nobody in my bedroom. And I was like, right, that's awesome. And I swear, like, you just like when I'm playing, if I'm on like, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm on like, you know, a huge TV show or whatever, I just kind of like, I go to that. I'm just like, I just pretend like you were like 12 years old in your bedroom and just like playing to nobody. And it's really freeing to do that. And I feel like it kind of just takes away all that extra weight that a person could put on themselves, you know? And it's funny, I've done this for so many years and still, I think it's, you're not human if you don't feel little nerves when you get up there, you're supposed to feel it. Someone else said something great, which I'll share with you, is they termed it anxitement, and it's a combination of anxiety and excitement. And I think it was the mayor of LA at my niece's high school graduation, the mayor of LA said that. And I was like, I love that. And so when I kind of, when I frame it like that in my head, as opposed to I'm having a panic attack, it's way better. It works much better. And so that helps me kind of enjoy performing a lot more, as opposed to having to drink a complete bottle of whiskey before I get on stage. That doesn't work anymore, so I can't do that.
I know. I'm glad that that's not one of your latest tips, but I feel like, you know, it's so normal, because I also suppose when people do turn to something that they can escape with, whether it's drugs or booze or books or, you know, film or, I don't know, you know, running around town, or like when I spoke to David Byrne, he cycles a lot. So like that's his way of kind of meshing the two worlds of being alone and then suddenly being in front of 80,000 people.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it gets really fascinating when you have been doing it, when an artist has been doing it for so long and your motivations in life change. Like as you said, you have a daughter, touring isn't what it was. If anything, there's much more pressure to tour now. You know, because that's kind of a guaranteed financial remuneration for everything that you're doing. So I think that external pressure is definitely there. But so do you feel more cut out to deal with it now because you've had all of this experience? Or is it just because you enjoy it at the end of the day?
I feel like it's a combination, you know. I do feel like I'm better equipped to handle the road as long as my health holds up, for sure, now than I was years ago. Or I would just approach it in a much different way, because you have to, things change. But you know, people who know me, they know I'm pretty much a homebody, and I love being at home with my wife and my daughter, and my family all lives out in California, and you know, I'm simple in that way, and like I don't really go out much. And so when I do tour, you know, I'm not going to be someone that's going to tour, you know, 6 months straight. Or, I mean, I've done right. that. I've done that. I went 18 months straight, I remember, on my first record. But I had no ties. I didn't have any ties.
Shit.
But touring as much as I used to messed me up a little bit, where I remember, like, I couldn't, like, live on my own for a while. I was, like, I had all these weird, like, tics and anxieties and stuff that I had to work through. And now I finally have, I remember in my mid 30s, I was like, I don't want to miss out on like a normal life at all. I just want to settle down and like have a home life and all that. So I focused really hard on creating that for myself. And so now when I go out, you know, I go out like it's 2 weeks, like without, I won't go out more than, this is the longest stretch right now. It's about just over 2 weeks. But I won't go out longer than that without going home for a bit. Because I'm just not cut out for it, and I don't want that. But I do feel so grateful to be able to go play shows and the fans come and do that whole thing, and to make the music feel live. You know, it's amazing. But I just don't have any sort of dreams of like this long road life. I don't.
But I feel like that's kind of the dream, right? Is to not only work with people that you respect and that you gel with, but also to kind of make your career up as you're going to suit your lifestyle, as opposed to having any sort of pressure and not being able to deal with it. Because then your music is going to be shitty, your fans are going to, you know, feel despondent. So actually making it work, whether it feels selfish or not, I think is a much better attitude. It's sustainable, you know? It's not something that will you'll burn out.
You're talking a lot of sense right now, I'll tell you. You're making a heck of a whole lot of sense. Yeah, sustainable. I mean, that's like another great word. And it applies.
Sustainability.
We have to be sustainable out here, for sure.
But like, I feel like you can hear that you are excited on your record, as much as the songs are about what they are, and whether, you know, forget about the pacing, forget about that. You definitely sound like jazzed to be here. Like it's a strange phrasing, but you sound excited to be making new music again within this context.
Absolutely.
And I feel like it makes sense now. that you've clearly given yourself some sort of boundaries.
Yeah.
It's nice to hear because you don't hear it often. I think a lot of the feedback that I get doing this job is how tired people are, you know, and just really tired of not being able to start a family or feeling pressure. So much of the landscape is about churning out creativity, and that really is taxing for people.
One thing that you said made me think is, like, if you look at the set list of the shows, you know, of the last three nights, I mean, I'm playing 7, maybe 8 songs from the new record, which I don't know how, you know, how often bands could get away with that or do that, but like, we play the new songs and they feel like just like instantly just right part of like the fabric of the show. And I love seeing them and playing them with these guys. So it's cool. Like, it's very much the Caretakers tour, and it's very much, you know, a showcase for this new music. And we also dip into, you know, lots of the older material that people kind of came up with, you know, that I know they want to hear too. But it feels that's definitely what makes me excited, is playing all these new songs. So
you put in a lot of work early in your time in LA at the famed venue Largo, which obviously has been kind of this hub for music and also comedy. I've just known it, you know, there was like Elliot Smith to like Amy Mann and Fiona Apple, but also, you know, Paul F. Tompkins and Sarah Silverman, Tig Notaro. So what did it feel like
Tenacious D.
It
came out of Largo. Yeah.
Yeah. And John Bryan.
I was just talking about Largo
remember.
On the ride over here with my friend Natalie. Yeah, it's funny.
What were you saying about Largo?
She asked me if I knew, you know, if I was following the comedy world at all, because she represents some comedians and stuff like that. And
yes.
I was like, oh, I'm like, not as much as I should. Obviously, I love comedy and all, but I mentioned that I had just done this show at Largo, which has a huge, you know, comedy side. This podcast, which is a live podcast there called Dumb People Town, hosted by the Sklar brothers and
yes.
Andy Richter. And,
mm-hmm.
and
I love Andy Richter.
And I was kind of like, they asked me to do it. I'd be their musical guest. But I just have to play 3 songs and sing the theme song. And they have like a funny Dumb People Town theme song. And I was like, I really like those guys a lot. So I was like, I want to do this. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to expect, but it'll probably be cool. And I was telling Natalie that I got to sit on stage the whole show, and I would play a song here and there in between their commentary and all this funny stuff. And there were a whole bunch of other comedians in the group as guests as well. But I had the biggest smile on my face the whole night. I was laughing so hard, and I was so happy. I was so glad that I did it. And, yeah, the whole comedy element at Largo is such a vibrant thing. I got to see Ellen DeGeneres do. She had just done a stand up that was a Netflix special, and I got to see her do practice some of her material that would make it into that at Largo. And it's a small room, and I remember that was such a great night, and just a great place, and so yeah, that comedy night that I recently did was very fun. I enjoyed it.
We just listed off a bunch of people that have played there. You just mentioned Ellen, and it's a tiny space, and I feel like you can feel an affinity. Like, a lot of times musicians and comedians have this sort of, I don't know, unspoken connection. I don't know if it's about being able to just put your life out there very candidly. And, you know, just like giving it your all. I don't know what the connection is, but a lot of comedians that I talk to are also musicians or like obsessed with music. And a lot of musicians are, you know, obsessed with comedy. So what do you feel like is the thing for you that really stands out about that venue, and more specifically how it has been able to cross over between music and comedy?
Well, first of all, there's a guy, the guy who runs it, his name is Flanagan, and he's a great spirit, great person, and he's kind of curated this for years. And my real connection with Largo is at the original space, which was on Fairfax across from Canner's mm-hmm. Deli, and it's not there anymore. And that's where I was lucky enough to get some of my first ever live gigs there in the mid-90s. One of my friends from college, this kid, Adam Cohen, who is Leonard Cohen's son, he was one of my good buddies at school. I had no idea who Leonard Cohen was at the time, but I knew that his dad was a musician, but I didn't really have any interest there. But I had made some demos And he said, oh, I know this guy at this place, Largo. Adam knew about it before I even knew what it was. And he gave Flanagan my CD. And next thing I knew, Flanagan's like, yeah, we'll have you in. We'll give you a show. And I was like, oh my God, sweet. So that's what started me off at Largo. I always have to give Adam credit for getting me in there, and Flanagan for believing in my early demos. And he's always been supportive. So I would play there once in a while. I remember at the time it was super, you know, singer-songwriters. It was, you know, Elliott Smith, Amy Mann, this guy Jude was playing there a lot, all these really great people. And I remember I'd walk in and you could hear a pin drop. It was silent in there, and they'd be playing these beautiful, intricate songs. And I remember I'd come to play, and all my like friends from school from back east would show up, and they'd like, because it was basically an Irish pub, and they would kind of take over the bar. And they would talk loud through my entire set, and it would be so loud in there. And I was like, damn, I'm like, how do you get people to be quiet like this? I don't know how to do it. And people enjoyed it. It was just more of a rowdy thing. And it took me like 20 years to figure out how to quiet a crowd down. And the trick is you just get more quiet. You just get really quiet. And then everyone kind of pays attention. But
I love that. But, you lead by example. And they're like, wait, what? I can't hear you.
But that was a great spot. So then they moved to La Cienega and took over the old Coronet Theater. And that's where they've been. I'd have lost a track of how many years they've been there. It could be 10 years, 12 years. I don't know, maybe longer. And I've played there a handful of times as part of other shows, but I've never actually done a headline set there. And but I've seen Dimitri Martin there. So, like I said, I saw Ellen.
Oh my God, I love him.
He's great. And I saw.
Oh, he is such a sweetheart. Yeah, oh, the no, best. He's fantastic.
I've played there with my band, The Ohms. Actually, I played with Dimitri.
Yes.
With The Ohms, we did like a co-show together, which was really fun. And I think I did a benefit there or something like that. But yeah, I mean, Flanagan's still there. It's always great to see, and so many, you know, the spirit is alive and well at Largo. Yes.
Do you remember your first ever gig, the first ever performance that you had?
That I played? Yes.
Yes, that
like,
you played.
As like a trying to go for it performance, or like a talent show?
I mean the first time ever. So clearly the talent show.
First time ever was I was the drummer in a band called Cheese. And we played covers, and I don't even think we had any original songs. In the gym of my high school in Montville, New Jersey, I think I was a sophomore, maybe 14 years old. And it was some sort of dance or something. Somehow we got a gig to play at that. And we were playing like Replacements covers and The Police. And that was it. And then a few months later, I think there was a talent show, and I played drums again and sang. And we did talent show by The Replacements at the talent show. And we came in second place because some other band heard me sing, and they asked me if I would sing Neil Young's "Rockin' in the Free World" with them.
And then they won.
Well. And then they won. This old story. But then they won, and I didn't play drums, and I sang up front. That was the first time I ever kind of got in front of a band, and I remember we won the whole thing, and it was like, that was kind of cool. But I never, even till years later, I didn't think I would do music as a career. I was supposed to be a lawyer. Then I decided, well, after college, I was writing so many songs. I was like, well, let me try music for a little bit. And I could always go to law school.
But wait, isn't your brother, one of your brothers, a lawyer?
My oldest brother is a lawyer. Yeah. I was going to follow in his footsteps. So he was cool.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, honestly, you know, some people go to college and they know exactly what they want to be and who they are. Like,
right.
I had no idea. I was just like, I knew I was writing a lot of songs, but it seemed too obvious. I was like, I'm going to do music as a career? No, come on. I don't think so. So
tell me about the first show then, the first gig that you ever saw. And when was it and where was it?
The first time I ever saw live music that I remember was another talent show at my high school in the auditorium. And one of my brothers took me, and this band called Sand in the Face played. I remember they were a punk band led by this guy like Paul Schraft, I think was his name or something. Mm-hmm. And they might have been like borderline like skinheads at the time. I don't know. There was like
I don't know
what was going on, but they were pretty good, like for a punk band. I remember at the time, I was probably like 7 or 8.
Wow.
And I was like, this is kind of cool. And then this other band, like this metal band, like, you know, in Jersey, there was all these metal bands. These other kids came and they played like probably some like Iron Maiden cover or something like that. And I remember thinking, wow, this is cool. You know, I was exposed to music at a young age in my house because my older brothers would you know, my middle brother was a drummer and my other brother would try and be the lead singer. And they would have their friends from the neighborhood come around and they were actually pretty good. And they would just rock out in our basement. My parents would allow that. And I would be like 7 years old and they'd be, you know, in high school. They were older than me. So I would just kind of see this in my basement. I remember as a little kid thinking like I can do that. I could, you know, and they'd leave and I'd like jump on the drums and kind of get it going. But now I'm going to tell you though, the first real concert I ever went to, this was the first one with my parents that my parents took me to was in Atlantic City, New Jersey. At Bally's, I believe it was Bally's Park Place, and it was Diana Ross and the Young Rascals were opening.
Amazing! Yeah, that's pretty so cool first good. Gig. That's a great one. No one's actually mentioned Diana Ross yet, because on the show we always talk about first concerts, and that's a pretty stellar first show. Yeah. What do you remember about it?
I honestly remember the Rascals a little bit more than Diana Ross. I can't picture that part of the show, but I can, you know, I was pretty little, but I think I remember the Rascals, remember being like, whoa, there's a big organ up there. You know, like I was a lot of organ playing. And then I just remember being in Atlantic City, like for the first time or something. It was weird. The first show that I ever went to with just my friends, that's a whole different thing. And that was Poison with Warrant opening at the Brendan Byrne Arena, which I don't even know if it's still there or if it has a different name now, which is at the Meadowlands in New Jersey. And that was I was 14, I remember. I went with like six of my friends to see that show.
How cool did you feel walking into that venue? Because I feel like you had some sort of cool factor.
It's funny because I was like, you know, I was into that music at the time, but I was also into the Smiths and the Cure and R.E.M. and all this other stuff. So, like, I think I would have felt cooler if it was, like, a Smith show or an R.E.M. show. This was, like, I felt like I was going to, like, a pop show. Like, it was fun. But it was more about, like, just going with my friends. And I remember some of them, they, like, had this plan. They were going to, like, they thought they were going to get high smoking pumpkin seeds. I was like, what the heck? They showed up with, like, toilet paper. Some kid had a toilet paper roll with like tissue wrapped around it, like to make like a big cigar, and it was filled with pumpkin seeds. I'm like, what the hell are you doing?
This was
weird. I'm pretty sure that's a true memory that I have, and I was like, what?
And then
what are you
didn't
doing?
Just dream this whole thing up. Smoking, unless this is your secret confession.
It's true
that you want to smoke pumpkin seeds.
I definitely knew better at that point because I had older brothers, you know, but I think these were kids who didn't have older brothers or something like that.
But I do want to chat about, obviously, your collaboration with Scarlett Johansson as well, because you name all these, your influences are kind of wide ranging, as you said, what you were listening to when you were younger, the type of music you've made, the people you've collaborated with. So talk to me a little bit about that collaboration and what were the things that you really learned about yourself as a musician through working with somebody like her.
You touched on something earlier, like when you work with someone, they could kind of, you know, show you new ways of looking at your material, and that was like one of the biggest things was, you know, hearing her sing stuff that, you know, some songs that I had already written or I was thinking about something else when I wrote it, kind of put a different angle on it, you know, just kind of changes the context, which is always a cool thing. I remember when we first got together, it was really about like an energy and a persona. Like I didn't know if she could sing at all. I knew how talented she was and she was an old friend. But I didn't really know, you know, what her deal was. And I just was lucky timing that she was really interesting and doing some singing right at that time as well. And it just worked out timing wise. But she brought just like this cool persona to the project, and that was what I was looking for. And then she ended up being a great singer too. So
yeah, and then obviously as a fan of REM and then getting to work with Peter, how do you get starstruck often? Like how often do you feel like you meet an artist maybe on tour or on the road or even just somebody like from REM? How do you feel around them? Like, do you feel affected by that? Like how affected are you by like your heroes and all people that you really respect, whether they are legendary or not?
Yeah, you know, especially back then, you know, I was a little younger and I hadn't really met that many famous people and all that. But yeah, like all of a sudden you're on tour with your heroes. Like I grew up, like I was a diehard REM fan and there was this whole world that all of a sudden you're like kind of hanging around in. And I remember like just being, this is crazy. Like, and those guys are on tour, I remember, were, you know, sometimes you go on tour and you don't really mix with anybody. Everyone's kind of keeps themselves, but they were really always wanted to hang out. They're really nice. And we spent a lot of time together and had a lot of fun. And I always remember, just kind of was like a dream. It was like a dream. It's cool.
Do you have a favorite show that you've ever played, or maybe if it's easier to remember the favorite show that you've ever seen, is there something that's really memorable that really sticks out in your mind?
There's not a favorite show that I've ever played. It's probably maybe the last, you know, Last Night in Philly, I'd say. Typically moves like that. But as far as a favorite show that I've ever seen, that's tough. You know, a lot of it's just, there's a lot of ingredients that go into a good experience at a show. And like, sometimes you could be at a show of something you've anticipated for so long and you go and you're just not feeling good or whatever. And you just like bail early. I mean, that's happened. Like weird moments that, like, in my mind I was anticipating, like, I can't wait to hear this song live, and then all of a sudden, like, and maybe it's just me, I don't know, but then all of a sudden, like, I'm in the room and like I just gotta go, I leave. And that's happened before. And then there's other times, I think it's the kind of the unexpected moments, or just when the alchemy comes together. I got like the right slight buzz and I'm with some people and it's kind of unexpected and it just sounds great. Those are the special moments. Kind of typically would happen for me most often or consistently at a Morrissey show. I'm usually able to get there pretty easily at a Morrissey show. Springsteen show, usually get there pretty easily. There was a Sloan concert I've spoken of before, probably in 1997 or 98 at the Troubadour in Los Angeles. They're a Canadian band, and I remember that was just like unbelievable. Guided by Voices. Usually put on a show that will, you know, and like you go there, I go there knowing I'm going to drink some beers and we're going to have fun. I'm going to get rowdy.
Yes.
And I went with my middle brother maybe 2 years ago to see them at Terragram Ballroom in Los Angeles. And like by the end of the night, me and my brother were front row jumping up and down like we were, you know, kids. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was really fun to do that. And they have this song called Glad Girls. And it's a great song on record, but live, it's just like another level. And you just like kind of just jump up and down and you're just like got your arms around all these dudes up in the front. And it's super fun. And I really don't do that often, but that was special. So,
yeah. And you talked earlier about your brother being your biggest fan. Does he have a favorite song of yours? Like, do you know it? How much of his like fandom have you have you been privy to? How much has he shared?
And you know, he's the one, as soon as I record a new song, like I'll send it to him right away. You know, like he was the drummer in my band. He taught me how to play drums when I was little. And both my brothers are super influential on me and why I like music and all that stuff. But I think, you know, he has a few for sure. I remember on Arranging Time, if Shopping Mall, he was obsessed with that song. He just kept bringing it up. And I think on this new record, I think it's the title track, Caretakers.
Oh, yeah.
The song Caretakers,
it's so great.
Is his song. I think he just always, ECT, he really loves too. But I remember when I first recorded Caretakers, he became obsessed with it.
It really feels like the spirit of who you are. Like when I first listened to you many, many, many years ago, it feels Caretakers like that embodiment that I feel like you've been able to capture again, which is not something that you need to do, but just something that has happened, which I think is kind of fucking cool that you managed to do that. And your daughter, well, how have you, because I know you took a bit of time off, obviously, as you mentioned earlier, for her. Are you getting her into music too? How old is she now?
She's 4, and she's awesome. And she does love music, but she's gonna do it on her own terms. She likes what she likes. I have a playlist called B Jams, and that I've been kind of curating for her based on what she's been digging since she's been little. And it's evolved a little bit, but like, I think when they're young, they just want to hear like songs over and over, like the same songs. But like of the class, yeah. Like she definitely likes early Madonna, which is cool. And ironically,
wow.
It was the first music she ever heard when we were driving over from the hospital. I remember I was like, she was in the back, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to turn the radio. What's going to be the first thing she ever hears? And it was Madonna. And now she actually likes Madonna.
Wow. So she likes, what you've done.
She likes Holiday, Get Into the Groove.
It is important.
She loves Open Your Heart from the little later record, but yeah. she likes Karma Chameleon by Culture Club. I think her nanny's got her into Taylor Swift a little bit lately, but
that's just for the nanny.
They listen to that in the car a little bit. But with me, the first thing she says when we get in the car, she's like, put on Shrek. And that means she wants to hear All Star by Smash Mouth. She still calls it Shrek because it's in the movie Shrek. And she loves that song.
That's a fucking gem. I think that song is great.
It kind of is a great gem. At the time, I didn't appreciate it. And now I love it. I'm like, it's great. It's actually has great lyrics too.
Honestly, I don't know if that's like a virus, but it has seeped into almost all the cultures.
Yeah,
like,
it's pretty great.
Every wedding. Every milestone, every mall, every record store, Smash Mouth. This Must Be the Gig is produced by Adam Kibble, and we'd like to thank Billy Yost and The Kickback for our theme song, Rube, and buy their music at thekickbackband.com, Daniel Brater and Dean Berger for the additional sound design, and the Consequence Podcast Network, where you'll find a bunch of other amazing shows. Hey! If you've listened this far, why not go the extra mile and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts? Your comments provide valuable feedback for us, and it helps other people find us too. For information on new episodes, be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at TMBTGpod. And generally, just irritate everyone you know about the show. Thanks again, and I miss you already.
During the holiday season, everyone's trying to get you to buy more stuff. Instead, head to StubHub so you can celebrate the season at a game or show. Take the whole family to the ballet, bang on the glass at a hockey game, or sing along with your favorite artist at a concert. Hey, we definitely count that as caroling. StubHub has the best selection of seats for all the holiday events you want to experience with your loved ones. And every ticket is 100% guaranteed. Get to StubHub.com or their user-friendly app today. StubHub, StubHub, be there.
Consequence Podcast Network.